Hi, welcome back to SaaS Radio Hour. I'm your host, Matt Gay, and today I'm joined by Bardia from the Rome Research Team. Bardia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt, for hosting. I'm really excited. This is my first official podcast appearance, so don't mind me if I'm not the best guest, but I'll try my best.
You'll be amazing. So excited to have you here for your first real podcast. Curious, do you tend to be someone who listens to podcasts, or are you more of a reader?
I do read a lot too, less so these days because I'm just so busy with work, but at least podcasts, I can still listen to them because they allow me to multitask. But yeah. I love podcasts.
Nice. Yeah, so I wanted to jump right into talking about Rome and start off with a sort of probably silly question from my end. Is it Rome or Rome Research? What does the team tend to refer to it as?
We are Rome Research, but we typically go by just Rome.
Okay.
Although the research part is a big aspect of what we're trying to accomplish. So it's interchangeable.
So more or less, Rome Research is the company, Rome is the product?
Oh, I guess Rome Research is also the product. We just kind of, it's like shorthand, like
Okay, cool.
Apple computers and Apple, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe eventually
right,
one day
gotcha.
We'll just switch to Rome. Who knows?
I was going to say, it feels like over the past year, people seem to be shortening it more and more, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it seems like as we've become more part of the zeitgeist, people are just referring to us by Rome.
Yep. Yeah.
You don't need the research qualifier.
Either which one works. Yeah. So our company here, we're Capiche Research Corporation officially, but of course we just call ourselves Capiche.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, okay, with Rome, I'm writing these questions down, and I'm like, every time I write about Rome, I'm like going back and forth on, do we just call it Rome or Rome Research? So I'm curious, when did you personally start using Rome Research? And
Actually, the first encounter I had with Rome was in late November 2019. So about a year and a bit ago, I saw a couple tweet storms by Venkatesh Rao and Visakhan Veerasamy. And I hope I'm not butchering their names. They're two amazing writers, probably two of my favorites. And they're really big on Twitter. And they were just talking about how Rome really fits the way that they think, and it's a new paradigm for writing and organizing your thoughts. And I respect them so much that I was like, all right, I got to try this. So I went in with kind of very high expectations because of these two writers. And honestly, the first time I used Rome, I was a bit turned off because of the double bracket notation. I'm like, I like minimalism,
okay,
and seeing all the brackets everywhere was just driving me nuts. So I was just like, okay, no, I'm not. This is not the tool for me. And then a couple months later, I think I replied to a tweet saying, oh yeah, like I tried it, but the double brackets was just like too ugly for me. And someone was like, oh, there's a shortcut to turn it off. And I was like, oh, really? What? So then I turned them off. I was like, oh, this is so much better. And then I tried using it for journaling while I was traveling. I was in Bangkok and I was making notes every day about what I was doing. I didn't really have a system at the time. I was just trying to just take notes, and I wasn't really getting much out of it at first because I didn't really understand the core feature set, like the real raison d'être of the page references and backlinks and all that stuff. So I was kind of like, this is just too much for me. I'm not really getting much more out of this than, let's say, like Apple Notes. So yeah. I again gave up. And then in April, whenever I came back, I was traveling in Southeast Asia. I came back to Canada, Toronto, living in my parents' house. And my goal was, okay, I need to get a programming job. I was doing remote work, doing technical writing before that. And I had some programming experience, but I was like, let's hunker down. We're going to be on lockdown for quite a bit. So I was like, all right, this is the perfect chance for me to get into Rome because I can just learn all the features that I was too lazy, I guess, to learn before. And I'm someone who needs forcing functions to learn. So I used Nat's course as a forcing function. I don't know if you're familiar with Nat Eliason.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has this great effortless output with Rome course. So I was like, okay, I'm going to drop the $100. And Connor had just announced on Twitter that you would get a $100 credit towards your Rome account if you completed the course. So I was like, okay, if I do this, then it'll end up being, it'll break even. Like I won't lose any money, but if I don't do it, then that's just $100 gone. So I was like, okay, I'm going to just do this course in one day and just like blaze through and get my Rome set up. And Nat's course laid kind of the foundation for me to get started with using Rome to learn programming and get the most out of the notes, the articles, books, and podcasts that I was consuming at the time. Because I was spending a lot of time just consuming, and not really being able to take all that I've learned and kind of explicitly lay them out and connect the ideas. So that really was just like kind of the tipping point for me was having Nat's course and being able to structure my thoughts in a more useful way so that whenever I wanted to create something, for example, I made a bunch of articles on how to program Bitcoin in Clojure. I had a Rome newsletter called Rome on Sundays where I was taking my notes from the week and just publicizing them and having weekly discussions around them, which were incredible. They were almost like podcasts. Like we recorded a bunch of them and I went back and listened to them. I was like, oh wow, this is great. And a lot of this stuff, it wouldn't have been possible without Rome. Like Rome actually like completely changed my life because before that I just didn't have a way. Like I had taken many notes on like Paul Graham's essays and a ton of books that I was reading after I finished university. And those kind of just like went into the abyss. Like they were just like stuck there in Apple Notes and I wasn't doing anything with them. Rome just, yeah. And then it helped me learn how to code in Clojure. And then that helped me land a job at Rome. And then it helped me secure a job at like a full-time role doing support engineering. So it was crazy. Just a crazy ride.
That is awesome. So Rome was your quarantine project, and then it turned into your full day job.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, for you, what did you feel like was the thing that really made it click? So basically, when I first used Rome, and I must admit I'm not the best user of Rome, I tend to shuffle around between quite a ridiculous number of writing and notes apps. But the thing to me that I found interesting is I've always had a love for outlining apps. There was Omni Outliner that was very popular probably for around a decade back. There are tools like Workflowy that were a bit more of a modern take on an outlining app. And to me, I saw Rome and was like, oh, cool, it's outlines, you can move stuff around, that's great. And then you dig in and it's like, oh, I think the links are the biggest thing here. And that's the thing that really made it feel like I was working on this one research project for an essay I was writing for the Capiche blog. And you could link everything and pull it all together. And it was like, oh, wow, okay, this makes it a lot easier to actually take notes from multiple books and pull it all together in one place. What do you feel like was the thing that sort of clicked for you with Rome? Was it that linking or is it some other aspect of how Rome works for your research?
I think I had many, I guess, like aha clicking moments as it just kept compounding. So the first thing was kind of seeing the links, actually being able to see like where the different concepts appeared in different media and having them all in one place. And then the second thing, well, I guess the sidebar was also a huge thing where you could just have multiple different things open in the sidebar and have one main outline where you were pulling in stuff. And at the time when I started really digging into Rome, I didn't use block references much. I was more just rearranging things and rewriting stuff in my own words. And then now, like as I've gotten more into Rome, like block references have kind of become like my bread and butter. That feature is specifically, I think, because it allows you to reference not only concepts or kind of higher level ideas, but rather just like even at the most granular level of like a single thought or a single task and seeing how that task or thought has progressed over time, or seeing what other tasks or thoughts that it has led to. So that was a huge thing for me. Another thing for me was the journaling aspect of just having everything in the daily notes. And that's something that I didn't really grasp until maybe a couple months in, where I was starting with Nat's course. It structures things in project pages, article pages, like, and not in the way where Connor actually, it's the way he uses Rome, is just writing everything in the daily notes and then just linking stuff up so that when you go to the pages, not many blocks actually live on the pages themselves and they're just full of backlinks. So that was another like kind of insight to me, was that you can actually just write in your daily note every day and still you can have an emergent structure. And with all the different ways of querying tables and like attribute tables and all that other stuff, filters, you could create structure as needed rather than having to, because I tried Notion before and I was spending probably like 3 days just like creating this Bardia OS system in Notion, and it was just so beautiful and so nice, and like, and it just didn't work. Like, I had all this stuff and it was just so frustrating to use, because I was just like, oh, like this, where does this note go? Like, it's associated with like the podcast that I'm reading, but it's also related to this project I have of like revolutionizing education. So where do I put this thing and how do I link it together? Like, it wasn't possible. I didn't even have those thoughts, honestly. It was more just like frustration. And then it became clear when I started using Rome that that's what was missing, was the linking and the ability that to have thoughts be kind of connected to each other. Even if they're, even if you started in one place, like you can easily port it over or bring it over to another place. And yeah, so that was amazing. I'm trying to think of what else, like the big thing from Nat's course that I got was honestly just like, the attributes and attribute tables and having a way of kind of, just having a standard set of, yeah, attributes, I guess, for each thing that I was reading and kind of being able to, create a table. And this isn't really a well-documented feature, and it's a pretty, pretty alpha feature still. But it was really nice to be able to see that I can pull in like all my books into one place and I can see, oh, okay, so these all have the same concepts attributed to them, and then I can filter the page by what concepts that I wanted. So I could get the books all or the articles all relating to, for example, creativity or memory, and then like all the other small features that just kind of you can mix and match them together, like Pomodoro timers. Queries, as I mentioned before, tables, Kanbans, and yeah, so that was really great. And then honestly, probably the thing that really was just like, this is special, was that I've been big into memory stuff. Like that's kind of one of my hobbies, is just like kind of like researching how memory works and what we can do to bolster our memory. I started using Anki. I don't even know if it's pronounced Anki or Anki. I have no idea. But either way, Anki. Cool.
The flashcards app, right?
The flashcard thing. Yeah, yeah. So I actually tried building something like Anki for learning book quotes and specifically aphorisms. Like Naval Ravikant and Nassim Taleb both have a lot of aphorisms. So I actually made an app for that, like a mobile app, to make it super easy. Because Anki, you need to do a lot of manual work to get all this stuff in. You have to make your own decks. And like creating the prompts themselves is like a whole, its own thing, right? So I was just like, I need to make this as simple as possible. And then I realized that I wasn't really actually learning any of the stuff that that I was learning. Like the aphorisms that I was memorizing weren't really, they weren't really, really sinking in or connected to the things that were really important to me, like learning. So it was good to just have them in the back of the mind. Like all these aphorisms, they would come to play. For example, if I was talking to someone and they said something that reminded me of an application of the aphorism. So that was cool. But what really was great about Rome was that I could create my own spaced repetition system within Rome, within context, so that I could ask myself questions to test my knowledge and have that stuff come up every day whenever it was time for me to review them, and it was in flow, and it wasn't something where I had to go to a separate app. It was just like I was taking my notes all day in Rome anyway, so it was great to just be able to create this spaced repetition system. Shout out to Shu Omi, I think he was the one who had the original version that I took inspiration from, and yeah, like so just being able to that's how I taught myself closure, was just like continually testing myself on the stuff that I knew, and it was just coming up every day in the daily notes. And that's the beauty of the daily note, is that if you stick there, then you can have everything kind of come up the day that it needs to come up, and not, you don't have to worry that, oh, I need to go find that thing that I wanted to learn. It's like, oh no, like I tagged it for January 17th. So it's going to come up that day. And I know that that's what I'm going to be doing that day, is like reviewing my notes on Clojure and how to port like Python code to Clojure code. So,
that was another one.
Yes. So it was really great. Just,
if I can interrupt you there real quick. So you mean, I guess this makes sense now that you said it, but I just never thought of doing that. You could tag a date in the future, and then when you open Rome on that day, the daily note is already going to be populated with something that your past self wrote.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like one of the key things for me, was just like, this is not just a note-taking tool, but it also has basically a calendar app built into it. And all the other stuff, like being able to like tag times very easily, so you can track your time attention management, and also code blocks. Like that was a huge thing for me, because I was writing in Clojure and Python, and I needed those notes to also be in the proper format. And a lot of other note-taking apps do not allow you to kind of format based on the language. And at the time, I don't think there was a Python, or I don't think there might have been a Clojure or Python. I forget which one. So one of the code blocks was a little bit off the formatting. But once I came on board, that was one of the first things I did, was like just add support for all the different languages for formatting for the code block, because like we have a lot of programmers using our app to not only learn things but actually manage their software development process. So and that's what we do at Rome ourselves as well. We do a lot of product design and engineering work within Rome.
So instead of re-Googling everything and copying it from Stack Overflow, you can check it inside of Rome and copy it from there.
Yeah, exactly. And we have like a bunch of cheat sheets for the code base, for the SpaceMax editor that most of us on the team use, different Clojure tricks. So it's really great to have all that stuff just like at your fingertips, and you don't, and it's always there, and you can keep updating it. So if you find that someone, for example, because we have a shared Rome, if someone had written like a description for the shortcut for example, code folding in SpaceMax, then I could go in and actually explain more in depth what what I believe is like a better description. So it's really nice to have something that's there, but also can be updated. And then if you use block references and like text and alias, then you can actually even like track the progression, as I was saying before, of how that description evolves over time. One thing that I don't use much is versioning, but that's another way of doing something like that.
It's awesome. So in the chat, we've got a few messages that just came in.
Awesome.
I apologize. I may mispronounce your name. Babav wrote, wondering what the best SRS system is in your opinion, and then followed up saying that, oh, you built a custom one for yourself. So that would be repetition, right? Yeah.
So the way that Anki works is it uses this algorithm called SuperMemo. So there's this Polish guy, Peter Wozniak. He's a memory freak, I would say. He's like, I don't think there's anyone more obsessed with improving their recall than this guy. And he's developed, I think he's on SuperMemo, like the algorithm they use, I think it's on like version 14, but he's building this all for himself. But a lot of other spaced repetition systems use some form of this algorithm, which it requires you to say whether something was easy, hard, or you got it. Or you didn't get it at all. It's a very advanced algorithm, I would say, whereas the system that I use in Rome was basically just a modification of the Lightner box system, which is kind of the original spaced repetition system, where you just add something, anything you want to remember, you tag it with like this is how I do it in Rome, is I tag it with like hashtag one. And then that hashtag one, there's a page for it. I have a page called SRS. And in that page, I have a list of, I guess, all the numbers from 1 to 10, all the hashtags, and then the dates that I should be reviewing the things that were tagged with that number. So for hashtag one, it's review every day. Hashtag two, review every other day. Hashtag three, review every 4 days. And you get the point. You just keep going. And then once you get to 10, you're done. So what I would do is anything that I wanted to remember, I would just slap a hashtag one under, and then it would automatically appear the next day. The only thing that was manual about the system was that I would have to update the date, but because of the date picker feature, and it was just super easy to, like, every time I finished a session, I would just move from that SRS page. I would change the date. For example, if my hashtag one was nested underneath that was today's date, then I would just go to that SRS page and change it to tomorrow. And then it was just very easy because I had all the intervals laid out very, very explicitly underneath too, so I wouldn't make a mistake. And that's how, and then I would basically, when I would going through this book on how to program Bitcoin in Python, I would go through each chapter and then create questions. And then I would have layers of nesting of different questions because there would be related stuff, obviously. And I could hashtag each one in line so that whenever I was going through my review process, I could see all the answers in context of where they came from and what other questions they were related to. So it wasn't just that I was testing myself on that information, but also seeing making myself be exposed again to the context that it originally came from, which is also super useful. And something where like Anki, when I was I was trying to learn Space Max through Anki, and I was just testing myself every day through their app, and there was no context for that stuff. And it was fine for key commands and stuff like that, but when you're trying to learn more structured information where the context actually does matter, it started to break down because then you had to bring in the context into the prompts, which made writing the prompts a lot harder. Whereas in Rome, I could ask myself this question about, for example, finite fields, which is something that is used within elliptic curve cryptography, which is like the backbone of most crypto protocols, that I would be able to actually see like what note did that actually come from, and then see what the full answer is as well, not just the one that I had made testing myself in like the flashcard way. And the way that I would do it is I would have it nested and then I would collapse the bullet. So then when I expanded, I could just see like, okay, did I get this right or wrong? And then because of how like manual, I guess the system was, if I found that, for example, there was something that I knew like for sure, even if it was on like the second, like hashtag two or hashtag three, if I knew that I would never forget this thing, I could just move it to hashtag 10 and I could just move it to done. And I would never see that thing
again.
Yeah. And then if I got something wrong, I would move it back to hashtag one. So,
okay.
And then I would, at the end of the day, I would just review all the hashtag ones and then just keep going that way.
That's incredible. So the most detailed Anki system I had seen was a friend who was using it for language learning, and he had a ridiculous set of flashcards, and I'm not quite sure his whole system he had going. But something like this sounds like it could be used to learn quite a wide range of things, really, and especially the context.
Oh, for sure.
I love that idea of being able to sort of see the context and remind yourself where you learned this and what else it was related to. It reminds me a bit of, I don't know if you have a similar feeling, but whenever I go through my old photo, the older photos in my phone, and you see just some random thing, like, I don't know, I every now and then will take a photo of a parking spot to remember where I parked so I can go back and find the car without having to go crazy. And you'll flip through a few things there, and it's like, oh, wow, you remember this whole little, like, microism of your life that you would have otherwise forgotten. And I feel like that can be a powerful thing with Rome's linking, is that you're sort of building this related set of stuff that can remind you, oh, yeah, that's how I got here. Not just the note of like, here's what I learned, but I guess the path there. And I don't think I really heard of a system to sort of pull that all together as well until you just described that. So that's super cool.
Yeah. And just like when I joined the company, so we work all in the same graph. So I went back and I was just roaming, I guess, through the company Rome. And it's just so interesting to see kind of how all these ideas were related and how Connor, for example, got to certain conclusions or how he made decisions for certain product features. So it was just awesome being able to, like, even going through someone else's Rome, just seeing kind of the connections and the paths that they took. So yeah, I think the context thing is huge. And also, like, your life is not siloed. Like, your work life and your personal life is not, like, as much as people want to say they're kind of like they want to keep it separate, it's really not. And like the things that you do at work or the things you do when you're learning can be related. So that at work, I always have like a tangent tag. I think Connor came up with that, but it was, it's awesome. So like anytime I'm like writing about something, I can just, I just like, I'm just like, oh, I have this other idea that's kind of related, but it's tangential. So just tag it with tangent. And then when I can go back, filter by my name, tangent, and then see where all my tangents came from. And then maybe I can find some pattern in them, or like see like what product or like what things that am I doing that's leading me to even have tangents in the first place. So there's all that stuff, and also emotions. Like, I don't do this as much, but I know that a lot of people find use where they just like tag their emotion while they're doing something, and then they can just go and check that emotion and see like, what were the activities that made me feel frustrated? What were the activities that made me feel grateful? What were the activities that made me feel excited? And that also is super powerful. And that's one of the things when I demo the product for my friends, is that's like the first thing I bring up. I'm like, you can just track your mood over days and see like, find correlations between what causes you have a bad mood versus what causes you have a good mood. And then also being able to track the people in your life. That's another thing that I found like super awesome, is that I can go back into my database and just like my best friends I have all tagged in there. And like whenever we did stuff, I would tag. And as it was easy during quarantine, because it was very like rare that I would see people, so that it was easy. Like I didn't have to tag, like I was just like, there wasn't that many opportunities for me to tag stuff, but I can go back and say like, oh,
right,
June 18th, 2020, me and my friend Josh went for dinner at this Indian place, and it was awesome. And I probably wouldn't have remembered that if I didn't write it down. And then I could see all the different times that I hung out with Josh. And it's pretty cool to see.
Interesting.
Like,
yeah.
And I'm sure like in 20 years from now, when I go back and like go through my graph, I'll be like, there's going to be so many things in there where I didn't, like I would have never remembered. There's no chance I would have remembered.
Right.
And definitely. But having that trigger of like, oh, even if I didn't take that many notes, it would just pop in all the other memories. It would just like, they would all rush back, which was amazing.
So that basically, you ended up building a personal CRM inside Roam.
Yeah.
Which takes it a bit further. So you've got basically Roam's core CraftsMap. Actually, the landing page still says Roam Research is a note-taking tool for network thought, which almost seems like it undersells what Roam is.
Huge undersell.
Think of Roam as a notes app, right?
Yeah.
And so
I honestly think of it as
right,
a personal OS. Sorry, go ahead.
Personal OS. Okay, that's an interesting phrase. Dive into that a little bit. What do you mean by a personal OS?
So it's like an operating system. So it's like my life operates through Roam. So like I track like what I'm eating, the vitamins I take, the exercises I do, the work I'm doing, my thoughts, almost everything's like running through there. And it's also connecting to all the other stuff in my life, like my relationships, like one thing that was really great for me was like, I started like seeing a girl when I was working at Roam, and I would just like notice that like I was getting distracted by her. So I started tagging like, oh, like distracted by like X person. And then over time, like I started noticing, oh, I'm getting way too distracted. Like I need to stop like checking my phone during work hours. So it was just like connecting everything and having your whole, like the more that I see from Roam, and Roam can also be seen as almost like an IDE, because you can run arbitrary JavaScript within Roam and you can run CSS through Roam as well. So you can make it your own as well, which is, it's just really, really cool. And you can connect to all these other apps through Roam.js as well. So you can bring in your calendar events every day to your daily notes. So you don't even have to manually bring in stuff. Like if you, for example, made something in Google Calendar but forgot to bring it into Roam, you could have an extension that just automatically pulls that stuff. So it's been a way for me to kind of organize my life and be way, way more productive. Like I think the other day I was kind of like trying to figure out what is the core value that Roam is bringing to users, because there's enough pitches about it to say like what it does, and there's so many different angles you can go with that. But I think at the core, like the base level, the fundamental thing that Roam provides is a way to leverage your brain cycles more effectively. And more effectively doesn't mean that like it's necessarily like, oh, like you're doing stuff faster or anything, which it does also allow you to do because it's very frictionless. But it allows you to see things in different ways and visualize them and put things together in ways that you normally wouldn't. And the same way that psychoactive drugs like psilocybin and LSD do, it allows you to see the world in a different way. And that's super useful because you're stuck usually like when you're doing, for example, if I'm programming and I'm not writing into Roam, I have this whole kind of like you can go down rabbit holes into code and not really know what you're doing. You don't really see, you don't get this, you can't like, can't really analyze yourself from like the third person perspective. But with Rome, you can, because you can write down all your thoughts. And then like, you can see, oh, I just spent like 4 hours trying to fix this CSS bug and it really didn't go anywhere. Whereas like if I'm, yeah, and then I can write down all the code within Rome and write down all the decisions that I'm making, all the choices that I have, and it really leads to better decision making. And that was just, and the whole thing, Connor, is just like, this is a tool for better thinking. And that's really what it does, is just, it makes your thoughts, I don't want to say more profound, but allows you, like, there's a lot of things when you, like, if you take any of those psychoactive drugs, you can think almost anything is profound. But I think Rome does a great job of kind of like, you can figure out what's actually core and like true just by constantly writing and bringing all these different like sources into one place and having them easily connected. And Connor talks about this, is like Rome more accurately represents the way that your brain works, and the way that your brain works is associatively. So whenever I say, for example, waterfall, it not only like, there's no like thing that in your brain that has like a, there's no folder in your brain of waterfall, but there is like that thing triggers an associative link to all the different times that you might have like thought about a waterfall, or like that song, what is it, like waterfall, I don't even know what it's called, but I just recall that, or I recall like Niagara Falls,
right,
or like the waterfall, sure, that I went to in Costa Rica. So all those different things, like even though they're not even related, like they might not even be a waterfall, or like waterfall product development cycle. So all those things, like they use the same word, but like your brain thinks of them associatively. It doesn't think of them in a hierarchy. And that's what Rome allows you to do, is just think more associatively in the computer format, which is, I don't know whether this makes it more true or not. It seems that having the thing that you're working with more closely resemble the way that your brain works allows you to think better, because you're not trying to fit the square peg through the round hole. You're not trying to force things into the format that the software has laid out for you, but rather it's really naturally just the same way that your brain works. And obviously there's ways that we can make that even more so true, but I think so far we've done a better job at doing that than, and I shouldn't say we, because honestly the core product is mostly Connor and Josh, our CTO. But so it's been great.
It takes a team. You say waterfall, and I think of grilled chicken, of all weird things. So
really?
Growing up, there was this waterfall near where we lived, and there was a vendor there that would sell this grilled chicken that was marinated in some kind of a red sauce. And other people make a similar thing, but that's the one that to me is like one of the best grilled chickens I've ever had. And so to me, I think of waterfalls and like I connect that backwards, but there's no reason technically, right, why that should be connected other than it's a place and time memory connection that makes you go, oh wow. And it's how like a smell, I guess, can prompt the memory of some weird thing that you might have otherwise forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
It's those kind of weird associations, which in the chat we have someone said, double bracket waterfall equals unlinked references. similar thing. Evernote used to bill themselves as being an external brain, where it felt like it was like, okay, your brain's going to get too full, almost was the pitch, if you need to remember everything you read. And so instead, dump it all in Evernote, and then almost build your own private Google is how I always approached Evernote, where you just dump everything in there. Maybe you're never going to use it, but whenever you search for, oh, let's say grilled chicken, you're probably going to find that recipe that you saved for how to make that, right? Whereas with Rome, it feels like you're – and so then to use that effectively, right, back in Evernote or in other tools now, like, say, Notion, to use that effectively, you're going to need to organize that. And with Rome, you're instead building all these connections. And so over time, you end up with almost a mind map of info that you can sort of navigate through and find your way around. And so that almost like puts Rome in its own category as far as note-taking software goes. Obviously, there are a few other similar tools now, things like Obsidian, that are built all around linking. Of course, the original Wikimedia engine is somewhat similar, where you can see references across Wikipedia. what else do you see sort of as Rome's, I guess, peers or the closest other tools if you had to use something else today? What feels like something else in that space, maybe that doesn't typically get classified?
Well, we do have some clones, like Athens Research and LogSeq or LogSec. I don't know how to pronounce it, but they're actually like Athens builds themselves as the open source Rome research. So they're clearly like in the same category. They're not, they haven't reached, like they, I don't even think they have a public beta, which is actually kind of hilarious that it's an open source project, but you can't use it unless you're part of the private beta. But not to knock them. They're great people there. Great minds working on Athens. But yeah, I think those would probably be the closest things because they're just trying to be Rome. I think Obsidian is similar in some ways, but I think their block reference implementation, and I know like not like most regular Rome users don't use block reference as much, but I think like block references is like one of the key primitives that makes Rome what it is. And it's unfortunate that they chose to use such a paltry implementation of such a powerful feature. And I think that there's a big difference between Rome and a lot of these competitors because the ideas that drive Connor and the vision that Connor has is much, much more beyond just using Rome for yourself. Because a lot of these tools are not really aiming for a multiplayer experience. They're aiming for just being great. And I think, I was saying, Rome is a great personal OS right now. But the end goal of Rome is to become a graph of graphs, a federated graph of all of the world's knowledge where you can not just only link your thoughts, but you can link everyone else's thoughts as well. And that's what really drove me. And another thing is just like becoming a tool, like becoming the best tool for autodidacts. And I've already seen it. It already is probably the best tool for autodidacts. It's the only way I found to actually learn things effectively and still have those things kind of, again, using the spaced repetition system, like be able to keep those learnings in mind as you move further away from the first time that you encountered them.
Right. So you mentioned shared graphs. That brings me to another question that Ben in the chat had asking, do you have a personal RDB and WorkDB? So a personal Rome database and a Work database. If so, how do you create connections between those?
So actually, this is where I think we're going to need to wait until cross-graph referencing is supported, because right now I decided that barring extremely personal confidential stuff, I'm doing all my writing in the company Rome. There's a high trust environment within the team. So I honestly, it feels like family. So I don't mind writing a lot of my stuff that I eventually will port over back into my personal Rome or just reference them when that becomes available. But everything is nested under my name tag. So it's hypothetically super easy to bring back all that stuff. Right now, however, I do not really write in my personal Rome almost at all, which is kind of a shame because I have so many things in there that would be great. But like Rome has really become my life. Like I'm living at the Rome Manor right now. I'm spending all day with at least a couple people on the team. So for me, it's been more of a work tool now than a personal development tool. And that's just the great thing about Rome is like, I don't know, I keep saying the great or like the best, like whatever. I always say that, but there's just so many great things about it that I can use it very effectively as a work tool and also as a personal development tool and also as a learning tool. And I can also combine that. Like I even put an SRS system within our company Rome, and we have like a company Zettelkasten in that I just brought over a bunch of ideas from Gordon Brander, great thinker, Andy Matushak, another great thinker, and Brett Victor, which is one of the inspirations behind Rome and one of Connor's biggest heroes, if not his number one hero. So it was really cool being able to kind of combine all these things and seeing how the concepts within the Zettelkasten can be used to make arguments for certain decisions. So like if I'm making a decision for what support tool, like whenever we're moving to Intercom, I can bring in ideas from all these other places that not necessarily are like company Rome related. That's right now, I would say it's unfortunate that I'm unable to link them, but that is like on the horizon and one of the things that we are really, really excited about.
Cross-linking between databases would be huge. That will open up a lot of use cases, especially for some of the public Rome databases where people have brought books and reference material into Rome. As you can build links between those, I could imagine that being very powerful. You mentioned your switch to Intercom, which I found curious. I noticed that recently I was looking for something about Rome when writing up questions and came across Intercom documentation. And I had previously come across your changelog, which is just inside of Rome, and some of the thoughts and ideas around Rome, once again, stored in Rome Notes, and was curious, what got you to choose Intercom for your documentation? I almost expected everything would have been done in Rome, more or less.
Okay, so I think you might be a bit, I think you might be misled. a lot of our documentation is actually in Rome. Our documentation actually isn't in Intercom. We used to use Intercom. I wasn't here when we were using Intercom before. So we might have had a bunch of documentation within it from our last foray into the live chat experience. So if you did see stuff there, it's not really being used by the community. A lot of the documentation when writing new features, Connor writes them out in actually the daily notes within the help database. We are going to be creating a developer database for all our CSS and JS developers, as well as creating a more comprehensive documentation hub, because it's a little bit haphazard inside the help database. And there's a bunch of community help databases actually that have sprung up, and like Nat actually has one of the best ones. We really wanted to
actually,
use Intercom.
I got the app wrong. It was Freshdesk, I think.
Okay, Freshdesk. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so okay. We had started using that. I don't think we've actually updated those docs in a while. It was most like that was our idea was that it would be easy, like integrated with our support service to have all those things easily linkable. But our holy grail for support is actually to provide support within Rome itself and not have to rely on any external tools. So so right now, we're not there yet, but we hope to eventually get there once more features are built out that will allow us to actually provide a great support experience within Rome.
So I guess that has led me to sort of a related question is with Notion, one halfway not supported feature, halfway supported feature, is that people have started publishing full websites with Notion. Where they'll write up stuff on a page and then you can share it with a public link. And then there are these tools that sprung up to sort of master domain and sort of wrap Notion in an iframe so it looks like you've got your full custom domain on Notion. I was wondering, sort of with Rome, how did your team see that with publishing publicly? Are public databases something that are widely supported or just something that's sort of an extra that's there, but that do you see this as a great way for people to publish stuff going forward publicly or internal use is more 100%. The better thing?
No. I think the public thing will be huge. Right now, we haven't put much focus into that because I think there's a lot more things that need to be done from the infrastructure standpoint and just being able to easily do this stuff. Because right now, there are hacky tools that like the amazing people in our community have made that allow you to actually publish websites through like from your Rome graph. Like one of them, Tom
O'Shankey.
Oh, you've
got that too. Okay, cool.
So he has this thing called like I think Roman Pub, and you can choose parts of your graph and publish them directly from Rome to your own domain. And then you can style them however you want. And it's really cool, actually. There's still a lot we can do on our front to make this kind of native to Rome and have a way for people to publish stuff to their own website without having to use an extension. But our developers are just exploring the frontier and we're really learning from them more than anything. It's just seeing what kind of cool stuff the developers are building.
Which that brings us sort of to the Rome API. So that's listed in your changelog as Rome's quote upcoming API. We had Notion's Christina was on the show a few weeks back talking about Notion's API, which there it's going to be focused mostly on stuff in databases and creating pages. I'm curious, can you share anything about what Rome's API will support out of the gate?
So right now we have a private alpha API. And we actually have a public alpha API as well. So the alpha API for the public right now, the alpha API for the public, what it does is it adds a bunch of methods to the window object So Rome.js developers can directly access the window object, and originally we had only allowed them to use, so we use DataScript, which is a graph database in the browser, and you can query it using a little bit more obscure querying language called Datalog. And Datalog is really, really cool. It allows you to do a lot more granular queries than you would be able to with something like SQL. And so we allow people to actually directly access the database, query it using, for example, if you had direct access with SQL, you could actually have direct access with Datalog to query and pull stuff from your graph. And then a couple weeks ago, me and one of our new developers, Adam, we built out an abstraction over our event system to allow people to not only query their graph, but actually write to their graph. So you can create blocks, create pages, update blocks, change the collapse state, delete stuff. And that's all available right now to anyone who has some technical chops and wants to start working on it. And a lot of our regular users, even they use our extension, so they're taking advantage of the API, even if they don't know it. And then our private one, actually the public one, mirrors almost exactly the same structure as our private alpha API, which was by design. And so the people who really want to use the API now, even if they don't have access to the private alpha that we have right now running on Datomic, because we're switching to a new backend soon, which will roll out to all the graphs, which will allow for the cross-graph graph referencing that we were speaking about, and allow everyone to have direct access to the backend database. Because right now we're using Firebase as our backend, and it's just storing the transactions. The way that these work with DataScript is that because the key value store of Firebase, you can't really store a graph in there. We just store the transactions. But we'll eventually move to Datomic, where you're actually like the front end database in your browser will mirror the backend one in our service. So right now, the private API in the backend, it connects to Datomic. So eventually we do all, like this is out of the gate stuff. It's just a REST API as well as a JS SDK, which you can access through Rome.js. But eventually we want to offer the ability to, and I don't know how soon this will come, but a way to do webhooks and streaming so that if you want to, for example, subscribe to someone's database, then you can easily do that.
Right.
And look and watch for changes. So that's one of the things that our developer community right now has to kind of hack around, is adding mutation observers to see if the DOM node has been changed. And that's a really unreliable way of checking for changes. So one of the main things, for example, if we wanted to build like a Twitter feed of like a bunch of people, you want to follow their blocks that are related to, for example, memory. Then you could just follow the hashtag memory, and then it would watch for changes in anyone's database and then publish it. And you could just have a stream, and someone could make an app for mobile and just basically have like a Rome Twitter app where you're just pulling stuff from other people's databases.
That would be wild. Right. So today it's basically more or less a browser-based API where you're running almost locally on your machine. And then going forward, it would end up being more of a server-side API that could query or add data on its own without you having anything open.
Yep, exactly. And a bunch of people get around this with, like, Read. I don't know if you're familiar with Readwise, but they have, like, a Chrome extension. So you can import all your Readwise notes. And that was another thing that it was so great for me because, like, I'm actually friends with one of the founders of Readwise, Tristan Honsey, and it was just so great to see, like, the melding of both the products together and a great portion of our power users in Rome make use of this Readwise thing, which also is kind of built on this idea of spaced repetition and like recall and bringing back the stuff that you probably forgot when you read things. So having them both integrated with each other is just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's super cool. I had used it for a bit just to sort of resurface highlights from Kindle and Instapaper. Mm-hmm, and it's wild, that same thing, right? Bringing back old things you might have otherwise forgotten and then tying that together with Rome. Is super cool. If you're using that, which I haven't actually used the Rome integration there, is that doing any linking stuff automatically, or are you going to still need to go back
and
sort of link stuff?
It's really cool. You have to, okay, so you can link stuff, like the highlights themselves, you'll have to link yourself. The cool thing is there's actually a JS extension, which has been upgraded recently with the new Write API, which is called Unlink Finder. So what it'll do is whenever you're on a page, it'll highlight the words that haven't been linked yet, but you've already created pages for within your database. So you can easily link those things without having to think, oh, has this already been a page? Is this something I want to link? Because a lot of times when I'm writing, I'm not like remembering like, oh, should I tag this thing? So, and obviously whenever you go through the unlinked references, you can do that stuff, but having it in line like that is great. So that's one extension that allows you to do that. But Readwise also offers this really cool thing, which is you can set the template for the page for which the book is going to be imported under in Rome. So you can have your own template with your own custom tags, and you can bring in the tags.
Okay.
In Readwise, you can also tag stuff. So you can bring in those tags into Rome and have them automatically tagged.
Nice. Okay. I'll have to play around with that a bit more. We have had one other listener question come in via email from someone who wasn't able to make the live show today, who had a question sort of around the changelog and how Rome Research sort of publicizes what's coming next. They said that sometimes it's hard to know what parts of Rome are obscure and not exactly a core part of the product and what is actually a public-facing feature. And they're wondering, how do you see the role of developer transparency with major releases? And how do you approach sort of, listing what's coming next and helping people prepare for that, which I think is probably a big part of what you're talking about now with the API. Are there any other major changes that will change how people use Rome, and how are you working on communicating that?
Yeah, so a lot of the things, are still kind of open questions, and so we don't really have a roadmap because we do have things that we do want to eventually accomplish, like for sure, like with this API or multiplayer or,
right,
or what have you. But it's I think it would be kind of disruptive to the way we work to publicly announce that we're going to be, for example, launching this feature in the next 2 weeks because maybe we realize that this feature actually is one part of a larger feature that we should actually build out, like maybe over the course of 8 months through different iterations rather than just launch that one feature. So I think one thing that this new developer documentation graph will do is allow people to kind of see what we're doing more clearly, because the changelog itself, it's not updated as frequently as I would like. I'm actually in charge of the changelog, and I'm not doing a great job of keeping up to date because we just hired 2 new developers, and the rate of change now is immense. And as a support engineer, I'm just spread super thin across like pretty much the whole organization. But yeah, there's a bunch of priorities we have, like algorithms of thought, which will change the way that people think, I think. We already have a templates feature, but that's something that we want to explore more, is just templates, but with conditionals and variables, so that you can just do way more intense workflows with less friction. And that's something that's definitely on the horizon. So I think a big, like, we are very transparent with the community. Where, like, I'm constantly in Slack. Connor's always on Twitter, talking about what's coming, what stuff we're doing.
Yep.
And I think it might be a bit harder for some of the people who aren't as dialed into these communities to really know what's going on, because you kind of have to keep your ear to the streets to hear what's happening. So as we grow, I think we'll come up with a bit more formal process of announcing these things maybe a little bit in advance and allowing developers to kind of prepare for changes. And that's something that started to do with this Rome CSS graph, which will again be folded into the developer graph, so that people will be able to see all the CSS changes that we're planning to make, to make things easier for our developers and our teamers.
Yeah, that's super cool. I was wondering, sort of from a, user-facing feature perspective, is, I know it's tools like Notion, right, that I would see the database and the Kanban boards and calendar and such as the core part of their product. With Rome, I'm curious, do you see all the extra features, the things like timers, Kanban boards, what have you, in Rome as being core features that will be supported deeply going into the future? Or are they sort of extras that help people, I guess, play around with Roam, but they're not exactly as core to the product?
I would say the latter. A lot of these things that people were like begging for, so Connor hacked up like an MVP version of them. And with Roam CSS and a lot of the changes we've made to allow it easier theming, people can actually make these, and with Roam JS, people can make them as powerful as they want. If you look at Cal Historian on Twitter, Mark Robertson, he's a professor, and he's created these really, really amazing dashboards and workflows using these kind of non-core features, but he's tweaked them and pretty much gave them superpowers using different stuff, and he's created a bunch of iOS shortcuts so that you can easily pull stuff in while you're on mobile, because that's one of the things that, again, is on our horizon. It's like a mobile app, but for now, we don't have one, so a lot of people, whenever they're on the go, they don't have an easy way of putting stuff into Roam, and a lot of their thoughts might get lost, but then, yeah, so we have this amazing developer community who's building these things on top of what we have as our core features, and a lot of these things are more like explorations and experiments, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily to be relied on completely. And I think, like maybe fortunately or unfortunately, it seems like a lot of people in the community are really taking to some of these maybe not so core features, at least in our minds. But when the API becomes public and we have Roam Depot, which will be like our version of an app store, I think a lot of those things, like those components that are just like in the block, people will create a way, way better Kanban board than we ever could. And it's a lot better for us to actually create the tools that allow other people to create tools. And I think that's like the whole point, is like that you don't have to solve the problem. You have to solve the problem for people to solve problems. So that's kind of our focus mostly is on that kind of thing.
Which ties back in with what you'd said earlier about Roam being almost a OS for your mind. It's like if you're building the core OS layer right now, and maybe you have these extra things almost in comparison to the calculator or notepad type apps that get built in with an OS as a bundled extra. But they're not the main feature. And honestly, if Microsoft dropped Notepad or Apple stopped bundling a calculator, it's sort of whatever, because other developers are going to build on top of that mm-hmm. platform mm-hmm. and make more powerful tools focused on that one use case.
Exactly. Yeah, that's awesome. How we see it is that eventually, hopefully we'll eventually make our own hardware. We'll make our own like Roam keyboard where you have all your shortcuts built into the keyboard.
Really?
So that's like one of the things that I'm really, really like, I really into is just having Roam, like a Roam device. I bought an extra monitor just to keep Roam open at all times, because when I was on my laptop, I would just like, I have to keep switching back and forth between coding and zooming and browsing and then Roam, which makes it a bit more, has a bit more friction. But when you have like a dedicated monitor just to have Roam open at all times, like you have no excuse not to put everything in there. So again, like I like forcing functions like that. I'm also super excited for like Roam in VR. Like Dharam Capella, he's an amazing developer who's built this 3D graph within Roam. It's like a Chrome extension that it creates like an even more immersive graph experience. And we tested it out in a VR system where we were actually like roaming the graph like in VR. And I'm constantly thinking about like how is Roam going to look like when everyone's in Roam and AR, and like they're not necessarily going to be using a screen, but they're going to be immersed in a world. That's
insane.
Like, we'll see in the next decade, hopefully like VR and AR become mainstream.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, if you end up building a device, you guys should acquire the Remarkable e-ink tablet and turn that into a dedicated Roam device. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I've heard really, really good things about Remarkable.
I can't get myself to buy one. I can't. It feels like an iPad is much more functional at a almost similar price point for mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
But there's something about e-ink
exactly.
screens that I've always found appealing. So I would love to have an excuse to buy one.
For sure.
Bardia, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for sharing so much about Roam and how you use it and how you see it growing into the future. I'm curious if you have one closing thing to leave with our listeners today as a tip or something for someone who's maybe Roam has never quite clicked for them and they're still using other notes tools, what would you recommend as the best way to jump in? Just the daily notes? Is that the real key for you as a sort of best jumping in
spot? I
find
to be a bit off-putting for beginner users because they're not really, they're always thinking like, where should I put stuff? So I think the best way to look at it is like, find a project or a thing that you want to do and see how Roam can help you achieve that thing. And I think the best way to do that is like have a certain, like an essay that you want to write, a blog post that you want to write, something you want to learn. And then there's so many great community resources for every single type of workflow or thing that you want to do in Roam that you'll find pretty much the exact thing. Like if you want to implement a GTD system in Roam, you'll find something about that. So I think the best way is to kind of have a goal in mind. If you're just going in there to say like, oh, okay, I just want to take better notes, it's going to be hard for you to find the thing that makes it click for you. But if you have a specific goal in mind, go into it with the mindset of having something in mind to use the tool for first. Because in the end, it's all about what you're using it for and not the tool itself. And if you're just using it kind of, it's like masturbatory of just like, oh, I'm just using Roam to take notes. But it's like, no, it's like the end goal is better thinking, but better thinking towards what end? And it's usually to solve some kind of problem that you have in your life. And for me at the time, it was like, I wanted to get a programming job. So that was the goal that I had. And that's what I used Roam for. And then all the other things kind of like, once you start using Roam for one thing, you start seeing how you can use it for everything else. And yeah. I'll end off with that.
That's awesome. Nice. Well, thank you so much. It's been awesome chatting with you. And for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. We can catch you on Twitter, right? That's the best place to follow
the
what you're working on?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Go to Twitter, ThePericulum. It means the dangerous in Latin. So,
Ooh, okay. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, I
thank you so much. You have a great evening.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.